feel like I've eaten already.
Ah, Bhagavad Gita. Yes.
Same.
Yes.
It's right there.
It would be great.
We have plenty of copies.
Okay.
Today we are going to read and study from the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 5, text number 6. Please repeat after me. Sannyasa.
Sannyasa.
Tu.
Tu.
Mahabaho.
Mahabaho.
Dukkham.
Dukkham.
Aptum.
Aptum.
Ayogata.
Ayogata.
Yoga yukta.
Yoga yukta.
Muni.
Muni.
Brahma.
Brahma.
Nachirena.
Nachirena.
Adigacchati.
Adigacchati.
Sannyasastu Mahabaho.
Sannyasastu Mahabaho.
Dukkham aptum ayogata.
Dukkham aptum ayogata.
Yoga yukto munir brahma.
Yoga yukti munir brahma.
Nachire nadigacchati.
Nachire nadigacchati.
Okay, let's try again. I will say very slowly so that you can hear and repeat it perfectly. Sannyasastu Mahabaho.
Sannyasastu Mahabaho.
Dukkham aptum ayogata.
Dukkham aptum ayogata.
Yoga yukto munir brahma.
Yoga yukto munir brahma.
Nachire nadigacchati.
Nachire nadigacchati.
Sannyasa.
Sannyasa.
The renounced order of life.
The renounced order of life.
To.
To.
But. Mahabaho.
Mahabaho.
Almighty armed one. Dukkham.
Dukkham.
Distress.
Distress.
Aptum.
Aptum.
Afflicts one with.
Afflicts one with.
Ayogata.
Ayogata.
Without devotional service.
Without devotional service.
Yoga yukta.
Yoga yukta.
One engaged in devotional service.
One engaged in devotional service.
Muni.
Muni.
A thinker.
A thinker.
Brahma.
Brahma.
The supreme.
The supreme.
Nachirena.
Nachirena.
Without delay.
Without delay.
Adigacchati.
Adigacchati.
Attains.
Attains.
Merely renouncing all activities, yet not engaging in the devotional service of the Lord, cannot make one happy. But a thoughtful person engaged in devotional service can achieve the Supreme without delay. Please repeat. Merely renouncing all activities.
Merely renouncing all activities.
Yet not engaged in the devotional service of the Lord.
Yet not engaged in the devotional service of the Lord.
Cannot make one happy.
Not make one happy.
But a thoughtful person.
But a thoughtful person.
Engaged in devotional service.
Engaged in devotional service.
Can achieve the Supreme.
Can achieve the Supreme.
Without delay.
Without delay.
So the following purport was written by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. There are two classes of sannyasis, or persons in the renounced order of life. The Mayavadi sannyasis are engaged in the study of Sankhya philosophy, whereas the Vaishnava sannyasis are engaged in the study of Bhagavatam philosophy, which affords the proper commentary on the Vedanta Sutras, The Mayavadi sannyasis also study the Vedanta Sutras, but use their own commentary called Shagiraka Bhashya, written by Shankaracharya. The students of the Bhagavata school are engaged in the devotional service of the Lord according to Pancharatriki regulations, and therefore the Vaishnava sannyasis have multiple engagements in the transcendental service of the Lord. The Vaishnava sannyasis have nothing to do with material activities, and yet they perform various activities in the devotional service of the Lord. But the Mayavadi sannyasis engage in the studies of Sankhya and Vedanta and speculations, and speculation cannot relish the transcendental service of the Lord. Because their studies become very tedious, they sometimes become tired of Brahman's speculation, and thus they take shelter of the Bhagavatam without proper understanding. Consequently, their study of the Srimad Bhagavatam becomes troublesome. Dry speculations and impersonal interpretations by artificial means are all useless for the Mayavadi sannyasis. The Vaishnava sannyasis who are engaged in devotional service are happy in the discharge of their transcendental duties, and they have the guarantee of ultimate entrance into the kingdom of God. The Mayavadi sannyasis sometimes fall down from the path of self-realization and again enter into material activities of a philanthropic and altruistic nature, which are nothing but material engagements. Therefore, the conclusion is that those who are engaged in Krishna conscious activities are better situated than the sannyasis engaged in simple speculation about what is Brahman and what is not Brahman, although they too come to Krishna consciousness after many births. Sannyasastu mahabhavo dukkam aptum ayogata yoga yukto munir brahma nachirena vigacchati. Merely renouncing all activities, yet not engaging in the devotional service of the Lord, cannot make one happy. But a thoughtful person engaged in devotional service can achieve the Supreme without delay. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitan Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Parakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavam Cha Sri Rupam Sagrachatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitantam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamcha. E Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavanishvari Vrishavanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. All we read today and everything we are going to discuss in the next minutes, it is not anything of our invention or the invention of our spiritual master. It is something that comes from thousands and millions of years handed down by an uninterrupted chain of guru and disciples, spiritual master and guru and shisha, spiritual master and disciple. This is the system, the only system. There is no other system. There may be exceptional cases of extremely pure personalities who had a kind of revelation in the heart or God telling them what to do or what to say from the heart or from the mind. But these are very rare exceptions. Actually, they happened very few times in the history of humanity. The authorized method of receiving transcendental knowledge is from spiritual master to disciples. And then, after some time, the disciple, when he becomes qualified, then he himself becomes a teacher of spiritual science and gives the same knowledge to other people. So on, the transcendental knowledge comes down through the ages. So something that we had to understand from the system is that both the spiritual master and the disciple, they had to be qualified, they had to be pure, because otherwise both the communication or the interceptance or the receiving can contain impurities, and so the transcendental knowledge during the ages may disappear completely. So it is very important that one does not simply search for a spiritual master, but search for a bona fide spiritual master, someone who is qualified and whose message is unadulterated. Otherwise, it does not work. An analogy which may be used is that we don't need to take power directly from the power, how you say, from the original powerhouse. You know, from this powerhouse comes other cables, you know, and these cables go all around. And each one of those enter into one house, and you can plug in anything, or you can plug in another cable to bring the power all over your house. And the power is exactly the same. You cannot say, well, the power from the powerhouse is more powerful, so I don't want, you know, to plug in my machine here, I want to plug it there, because it's the same. So all you have to be make certain is that the cable you're using is not broken. Otherwise, you plug it in and nothing happens, nothing turns on. So you have to be very careful to find which one, at which point the cable became, how you say, broken or useless. So in this way, in the history of humanity, there were probably more false spiritual masters than bona fide spiritual masters. Then there are a lot of people talking about religion, talking about God and salvation, but many of those are not bona fide. You have to be careful. When you begin to be interested into transcendental knowledge, you have to be very careful not to accept the first who talks about something different from others, or the talks about God, or there's a big white beard. You have to be very, very, very careful. So the Bhagavad Gita that we have now is the result of such transmission of transcendental knowledge through the ages. Actually, Bhagavad Gita, this book, was spoken for the first time in this material world 120 million years ago. It's a lot of time. And this knowledge was spoken by Krishna himself to Vivashvan, the god of sun, the sun god. And then Vivashvan spoke it to his son, Ishvaku, and then the knowledge came down through the ages. Then at a certain point, this line became interrupted. And then the transcendental knowledge was lost. And nobody knew exactly what it was. I cannot speak for everyone, but it was just my personal experience having born in one of supposedly most religious cities in the world, the city where the Christianity has its center. I was born in Rome, actually a few hundred meters from the Vatican. So I was supposed to be, and I was actually trained up from the first days of my life in Christianity. And this was exactly my problem with Christianity. The problem is that the quality of the information I was receiving. I remember one time, I was about 10 years old, and I was kind of restless young boy, and I was making a lot of questions. Questions are very important. You know, when somebody makes questions, it denotes either intelligence or an inquisitive nature, if someone is interested. If someone does not have questions, it may be maybe a little asleep, or maybe the talker is not a good talker, maybe in this case, but we hope at the end of the presentation to have a lot of questions. So at that time, the religion was obligatory, is that correct? Obligatory topic, study topic in school. And at that time, there was no laical professor. There were only priests. We were in Rome. You know? Then we had only priests coming to teach religion. So I was making a lot of questions. And this particular priest was quite annoyed by my questions because he didn't know how to answer. For instance, I remember distinctly, you know, it's a lot of time passed from that time, 46, 47 years ago. I still remember the question because that triggered my interest in spiritual life. And I was telling him how come I had the advantage of being a Christian and being here in this classroom making questions on religion to you, that you are a priest, a professor, and somebody takes birth, I remember, in the North Pole, I told him. There was no Christianity, there was no nothing, there was nothing, you know, there was just desert, icy desert. He didn't know how to answer, and they said, well, you are saying that if my life is a failure from the religious point of view, I go to hell. So, but I, being born in Rome, I have the possibility to choose because I have my religion. But what about him, the guy from North Pole? He didn't have this possibility, so he will not be a religious person, or at least he will not be a Christian. Why should he go to hell since he has no responsibility for his ignorance? He didn't know how to answer. And all these questions, you know. At the end, he told me something that shocked me. And it changed my life forever. And he said, putting questions is the work of the devil. It's demoniac. You should just have faith. You should just believe. And that is going to save you. Not all these questions. These questions are bad. So then I put him the last questions that I ever put to him, and I said, so what about if I don't have that faith? God made me this way, so why should I be responsible for something that God did? God did this young person not having a faith. I didn't have any faith. I wanted to understand. And he said, well, then you're going to hell. So from that day on, every everyone I would meet, I would always put questions. And again, I didn't find anyone that would answer to these questions. When I met my spiritual master in 1974, Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, he never told me to have faith. He always told me, try to understand. You find this phrase 1,000 times in the writing of my spiritual master. Try to understand. Faith will come. It is necessary because we cannot understand everything. It's not that we become Krishna devotee when we will have understood everything, because it's impossible. Because we are minute. But if I tell you India, I've been in India many times, and I know India. Many of them have not gone to India. If I tell them India is like this, you know, and I speak to them a lot about India, they go to India, they haven't seen everything, but since the first experience is corresponding to my descriptions, then they will think, okay, since he was right in this, maybe he will be right in the second thing. And when he finds out that even the second information I gave them was correct, then his faith will increase. And he said, well, he said 2 things right, so most probably the third one, or at least it might be, there are possibilities that the third thing will be correct. And so on, when we find out that whatever it is said in the Shastra, in the books, and in the words of the spiritual master are correct, then everything we are not able to understand or realize temporarily, then our faith will help us to accept, to go on in our path. So faith is not that we should reject faith, but it should come after understanding. First you understand, and then by that understanding your faith will increase, not vice versa. Well, of course, if someone comes in the temple has a faith in Krishna, like in India, there are many people going to the temple not knowing much about philosophy, not knowing much about Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavata or anything or like that, but they have just some faith. Of course, that faith is not something that came by magic. Faith comes also from previous life experiences. But let's say that someone has faith. That is good, but it's not enough. Because just like when someone, by an emotional push from the heart that believes in Krishna, and then just like emotionally went to the temple, emotionally will never go to the temple again. Because when you understand, you understand. It's solid. It is a foundation. But faith, well, you know, I accept. Oh, this is very volatile. It may go away any moment. That's why we have books. That's why we have discipline, practices, helping you not having faith, but understanding and realizing. Krishna, when he saw that the message that he gave to Vivashvan 120 million ago was lost, he thought how people would be saved. And then he said, I will appear again, I will speak Bhagavad Gita again. Then he came at the end of the yuga, the previous yuga, which is called the Dwapara Yuga. At the end of this yuga, Krishna appeared again, and in a particular circumstance, he spoke the Bhagavad Gita again. Not to Vivashvan this time, but to his friend and disciple, Arjuna. And they were not alone. They were in the middle of a battlefield with 640 million people. There were a lot of people in that place. And they all heard the Bhagavad Gita. And as a proof that the transcendental understanding is not objective but subjective, Only the devotee, only the pure devotees understood it as it is, but everyone else understood it in their own way. So everyone who is a pure devotee, then this type of knowledge is absolute. But when the spiritual master is qualified, but the disciple is not qualified, then the transcendental knowledge will not remain as it is. Then it's relative, because it's relative. It relates to the hearer. But if the speaker and the hearer have the same quality, then it's absolute. Because it's the same quality. Just like that Krishna speaks in the Bhagavad Gita, and he says the same nature. He talks about same nature, the transcendental nature of the Supreme Person, and the quality of the devotional service done by his pure devotee. That is absolute. Then in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna starts to talk, and he talks about many topics, but there are a few topics which are very centric in the Bhagavad Gita. The first topic which has to be understood is about duty. Although Krishna speaks about something else before, still duty is important. So how Krishna... Last time I gave a class here, the same man called me three times. So he has a particular attraction for me when I give class in San Antonio. Okay, now we go for me again. Arjuna does not want to fight. We are in a battlefield. Arjuna said, why should I kill? Who cares about the kingdom, about this, about that, you know? I'm not attached. So he wants to go to the forest. He said, I want to fight. But Krishna tells him, no, you should fight. So why Krishna tells Arjuna, you should fight? Is Krishna a violent person? He cannot be violent. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So why we see Krishna as violent when telling Arjuna to kill? Because we have a materialistic vision, a materialistic understanding. That's why we see Krishna as a violent, or promoting a violent philosophy. But if we move from our perspective and we go on the absolute perspective, then we can see that what Krishna was telling Arjuna was the supreme non-violence. This material world is not real. It's not that it doesn't exist. It exists. But it's not real. It's just a passage point to go somewhere else. So whatever we do in this segment of time that we spend in this body, in this world, it means something very important for us, spirit soul. That's why Krishna was telling Arjuna how to behave in this segment of time. And Krishna was telling him, these persons that you don't want to fight against, these people are bad people. They are going to rule the kingdom not in a godly way. So that's why I want you to rule the kingdom. You don't want to kill, that's okay, but are you sure you can kill? Krishna says to Arjuna, are you sure you can kill these people? And Arjuna said, yes, I have arrows and javelins and I have my spears, I can kill them. And Krishna said, no, you cannot kill anyone. And Arjuna, of course I'm paraphrasing, it's not... Krishna and Arjuna didn't say these words, but just to make you understanding better the message. The message was said that Arjuna was convinced that he was able to kill the other persons, that he didn't want to kill. But Krishna said, who you want to kill? The bodies? You cannot kill the bodies. The bodies are already dead. It's just like saying, I want to kill my car. You cannot kill my car. You can damage it. But you cannot kill it. Because it's already dead. It's a dead object. Krishna was explaining to Arjuna that the body is already dead. It's just a machine. He cannot kill a machine. And then Krishna asked Arjuna, you want to kill the soul? And Arjuna said, yes. Krishna says, no, you cannot kill the soul. The soul is eternal. It cannot be cut. Cannot be burned. It cannot be moistened. You cannot do anything to the soul. The soul is eternally always the same. You cannot do anything to the soul. So you cannot kill the body because the body is already dead. You cannot kill the soul because it's eternal. Then what's the point? You cannot kill. But because this is a saintly war, then you should fight it for the spiritual benefit of the people. And Krishna explains to Arjuna that the best way to act, means to do things during our day, is to do things without attachment to results. You just act for the sake of acting. Don't worry if it comes good or comes bad. And most important, don't be attached to personally enjoy the results of your action. This is called fruitive activities. What it means, fruitive activities? It took me some time before understanding this expression. Fruitive activities means I do something to get something. Just like you go to work, because at the end of the month they give you money for your work. They give you a salary. This is a fruitive activity, an activity you give fruit to me. I work, you give me a salary. Krishna says this is not a good way of acting. Not good. Not good because you are attached. While you act, you are in anxiety. You are always in anxiety because you think, if I don't work correctly, the man will fire me. Or maybe I work, oh, he doesn't pay me enough. Like this, the person who works in a fruitive activity, consciousness, is always in anxiety. But Krishna says to Arjuna, you should act for the sake of acting, without attachment, no repulse to the results. You should not be attached to enjoy, nor you should think, oh, this is bad, I should not do it because the result will be bad. When whatever you are doing comes from an authoritative source like Krishna or the Guru, then you should act for the sake of acting, without attachment and nor detachment to the results. The result doesn't pertain to you. You just act. Whatever comes, you give it. You work, give the money to Krishna. You are intelligent, then you do something good, then give the result to Krishna. Don't keep it. The more you keep, the more anxiety you have, the more you become entangled in this material world. This is the saintly way. And Krishna says half of the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is dedicated entirely to Krishna saying to Arjuna, you cannot kill. You are saying, I don't want to kill, but you cannot kill because the soul is eternal. And Krishna establishes the spiritual identity of the self, that we are not this body. Second part of the second chapter and the whole of the third chapter is dedicated to how we should act. We should act for the sake of acting. You come to the temple and just do your service. So does this mean that we should act, you know, like, you know, the guru told me to clean the window. If I break the window, who cares? I'm detached. Is this what it means? No, this is not what it means. It means that you should be detached to you enjoying the results of your actions. Not that you should be detached from the action, from the reaction of your action. You should be very attached to the reaction, but not for you. You should do a good service and give it immediately. Don't keep it. Don't keep anything. Do and give it. Do and give it. Do and give it. This is why in India we always see people going to the temple and giving something to the temple. You don't see one Indian without coming to the temple, without leaving. Maybe too little. Maybe 1 rupee or 2, they could give more. But the principle is correct. You come to the temple, you never come to the temple without giving something, which means 1 cent, $1, one apple, one banana, one something. But always bring something to the temple and put it in front of the altar, and this will purify you. And when you come to the temple, also ask for service. What can I do? Can I help in cleaning the temple? Can I help in the kitchen? This is spiritual life. This is spiritual life. Krishna was very adamantic in saying to Arjuna, don't be attached to enjoy the results of your action. Because Arjuna didn't want to fight. Why? Because he said, if I kill my friends, then I will suffer. Okay. But Krishna says, you should not be attached to suffering. If you suffer, you should not care about your suffering. Enjoyment and suffering are just two different faces of the same coin. It's the same value. Sometimes you enjoy, sometimes you suffer in this world. Does not matter. Just up and going like this. So this transcendental knowledge has been received by us through a chain, uninterrupted chain of spiritual masters. You should please try to understand this philosophy, try to practice it in your life. Of course, I spoken very little about a couple of principles, but now I hope that through your questions we can go deeper in the philosophy. Questions are very important because from those one can understand what you are interested in to listening. So, please now say your questions.
Thank you very much for coming speaking. I'm very glad to have you back however long you'll be here.
Going to be here in San Antonio for a couple of months more, then I will be.
I wanted to ask you, it seems in other religious institutions that certain texts from the scriptures are used for demonic purposes. And it seems like the one scripture that you spoke of about how you can't kill the body, you can't kill the soul, so go kill. You know, it could be used in like malicious ways. So what safeguard is there against that?
That's why we have different religions. Simple religions for simpler people. If someone cannot understand higher philosophy, the higher philosophy contained in the Bhagavad Gita, then one religion who says, don't kill, period, no discussion. And the Gandhi philosophy of not killing, you don't kill. But if we remember, we know by history that India at the time was under the rule of the English. And Gandhi had this plan of getting India free by non-violence. So some people will say this is not enough because these people are violent. If you are not violent, they are just going to kill us. And they did. They did. It's just an historical imperfection as saying that Gandhi got India free. India didn't get free because of Gandhi action. But anyway, this is history. We are not going to talk much about this. But point is that if someone is not able to understand the subtleties of a certain philosophy. So then don't talk about it, because they are not going to understand it. They can say yes, yes, I understand, and then they go out and kill somebody, say, well, I didn't kill anybody, you know. He goes in front of the judge, he says, well, you know, Manu Nadas said, I cannot kill, you know, the body is dead and the soul is eternal, so I should not go to jail. This is not our philosophy. This is not our philosophy. It's prohibited to separate the soul from the body. It's not your call. You have not the right to separate the soul from the... Of course you cannot kill, but you cannot separate them. It's not up to you. It's only when a very, very superior authority tells you, yes, now, because of the world's good, you should separate body and soul of this person, then you can do it. Then it comes only from God or from a very extraordinarily qualified acharya. You know? So then, simpler philosophies like Christianity and others are better for people. So we should, if someone is not able to understand Bhagavad Gita, we should encourage them to be better Christians and not artificially try to change into something they're not prepared to. I just received an email from a disciple of mine in Italy. He's been 25 years a Buddhist. And when he became my disciple, I started to preach to him about Vaishnavism. I said, after some time I realized that this person is never going to be really a Vaishnava. He's going to be a Buddhist Vaishnava, mixed. Then I stopped speaking to him about a personal meditation, because he meditates on the void. Now I'm telling him, okay, you keep going meditating on the void, and when you finish, you chant Hare Krishna, no? Like this. Right, because he's been trying for 12 years now. He's just too attached. He's not ready, he's not prepared. So he has to purify. So preaching is a very, very complex thing. And that's why the guru has to be a person in flesh and bones. Cannot be like there is one philosophy saying, oh, we are all Srila Prabhupada disciples, so we are all Chaitanya Mahaprabhu disciples, so why I need the spiritual mind? I have the books. I just read the books, I follow with them. It is not so. This is not so. Just like when you have fever, you don't study books, you go to a physician. Because every body is different. Maybe a particular type of medicine is good for you, but it's not good for another one. Maybe your body can withstand a particular quantity of medicine because it's a big body, but another one with a shorter body should take a little less. Just like my wife has a problem with thyroid, and every 6 months has to go to the doctor, and the doctor tells her, okay, the same medicine, now take 75. After 6 months, no, now you have to take 100. And after 6 months, go down to 60. But without the doctor, how can you understand? You're not a doctor, you cannot understand it. So a guru should be a person who applies to you the philosophy. The philosophy is good for everybody, but then the application may differ. Just like 100 years ago, and even today, a Vaishnava, a Gaudiya Vaishnava, is not such. It's not a Gaudiya Vaishnava unless he chants 64 rounds of japa every day. This is a Gaudiya Vaishnava. In India, you know, I've been told by some of them, if you don't chant 64 rounds a day, you are fallen. You are not a Gaudiya Vaishnava. But our spiritual master told us 16. So who is the better Vaishnava? Someone who chants 16 rounds a day minimum, or 64 rounds a day minimum. Let's see who can answer me in the right way. Who is the best?
Both.
Why? Because you don't advance in spiritual life by chanting 16, 32, 100. You advance in spiritual life by serving or obeying the spiritual master. This is the key. This is how you advance in spiritual life. Someone says, I've been living in Radhakunda for the whole of my life. You have been living in San Antonio. You know, what the difference is huge, of course. But if the guru sends you to San Antonio, you advance more in San Antonio than in Radhakunda, because you advance through the blessing of the guru, of the spiritual master. That's how you advance in spiritual life.
I have one question, you initially talked about the spiritual master, but in Kali Yuga, how can you identify who is the really qualified spiritual master?
First quality of the spiritual master, you have to belong to an uninterrupted chain of spiritual masters. He has to be a member of the Sampradaya, one of the four Sampradayas, and one authentic Parampara. Sampradaya is the main trunk, the Parampara is the branches, and then there are sub-branches, etc., etc. So when you meet somebody, you should ask him, who is your guru, what is your Parampara? So important is this, that you take the Bhagavad Gita, the first thing that Srila Prabhupada, before beginning to explain the Bhagavad Gita, he gives his Parampara. To tell people, who am I? Because you have the right. You must say, who are you? I'm going to listen to you to read this book. It will take many days. I'm going to dedicate to give you so many days of my life, so precious my time is. I'm giving to you. Who are you? Because if you are not worthy, maybe I shouldn't waste my time. So the Srila Prabhupada told us, my spiritual master is Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj. Spiritual master or my spiritual master was Srila Gaurakishordas Babaji Maharaj. His spiritual master was Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. The spiritual master of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was Srila Jagannathdas Babaji Maharaj. And then his guru was Srila Baladev Vidyabhushana. And his spiritual master was Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who was a disciple of Krishnadas Kaviraja Goswami, who was a disciple of Jiva Goswami Maharaj. And Jiva Goswami was a disciple of Srila Rupa Goswami, who was a disciple of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You want me to continue? And the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a disciple of Ishvara Puri, who was a disciple of Madhavendra Puri, who was a disciple of Lakshmipati Tirtha, up to Madhavendra Puri, and Madhavendra Puri, Yashila Vyasadeva, Narada Muni, Brahma, and Brahma Vishnu. That's the Parampara. But you have to ask, because if the man doesn't belong to anything, it's just a man talking, this is the first quality. Second quality, the guru cannot have any material desire. Cannot have any material desire, otherwise he's unqualified. Material desire means if you see the guru smoking or going with women or indulging in physical, then he is not qualified. Other quality, he has to be engaged in pure devotional service. He has to serve Krishna in his guru with all his heart, or with all his mind. And then he should know scriptures. He should always be ready to answer any question on spiritual science. Because if he doesn't know, if you put him a question and then you say, and then he says, so why people is dying and innocent people by earthquake, or in my native country there were many earthquakes in these days, so many people died, etc., and some of them were children, who didn't do anything. They were innocent people. And if you go, and now the Pope, I was reading this morning, the Pope, and the answer that the Pope gave, he doesn't know. Mm-hmm. He simply, flatly, doesn't know why these children are dying. Because he doesn't know about previous life. He doesn't know about the eternity of soul. And because the soul is eternal, this is not the first time that we take a body. Then, even if a child is innocent in this life, if he suffers in his life, it means that he's paying now something that he has done in his previous lives. But they don't know about previous lives because they don't understand about the soul. They don't know anything about the soul. And they say that the soul goes to hell, eternal hell, if you do something wrong in this life. They don't understand. It's impossible. It's impossible. Do you have children?
Yeah.
So, would you kill your child if he does something wrong? He steals something. Let's say that he does something very horrible. Would you kill him? Never, ever. Why? Because this is love. This is the way of love. A father will never condemn his children to eternal hell, no matter how sinful they may be. He can punish them, but punishment with the idea of re-educating them, not punishing for the sake of punishing, otherwise he's a sadistic person. God is not sadistic. He punishes the person to re-educate. So let's say that you are the greatest sinner in this life, then you'll be punished, but then you come back for a second chance, and third, and fourth, 10, 100, that millions of times, because God is so good, He will never throw you to eternal flames. So the guru can be recognized by evident qualities of knowledge and renunciation. Jnana and Vijnana. Jnana means knowledge, and Vijnana means realization of the knowledge. It has to be both. Any other question?
Can you please explain some more experiences with the Prabhupada?
Sorry?
Can you explain some more experiences with the Prabhupada?
If I had experiences with Prabhupada?
Can you explain your experience with Prabhupada, when you met with Prabhupada, what exactly the conversation had between you and Prabhupada?
You are asking me my personal experience with Srila Prabhupada?
Yes.
Yes, I can tell, but some of them are quite private, and it pertains to the sphere of intimacy, spiritual intimacy. And I always had the experience or perception then when I tell my personal relationship with Srila Prabhupada was like everyone would go into an emotional mood, and I myself go into an emotional mood, because there's not been a person more important than my spiritual master in my life. So I get a little emotional when I tell stories about Prabhupada, but I can tell something so that some of his some who may have some philosophical meaning. For instance, the first time that I met Srila Prabhupada, you have to understand, when I met Srila Prabhupada was the guru of 5,000 disciples. He had maybe a little less when I met him, but anyway, thousands of disciples. He had temples all over the world. He was a very important man, talking to the Pope, talking to Pope. He was a very important man. And by the mercy of my God brothers, I was given the service of personal guard of Srila Prabhupada. So I was staying with Srila Prabhupada in front of his door, guarding his door.
Where was that?
75 in France. Mm-hmm. Nouvelle Mayapur. Mm. You know, you've been in Nouvelle Mayapur, in Valencay. Valencay is a town between Paris and Lyon, halfway between. And we have a castle, a white castle. When you arrive there, it's like, wow, that you are like in heaven, totally white. Except the roof, which is a little gray, but it's impressive. It's an impressive place. So when I arrived last, because I wasn't supposed to arrive at all, because the temple president told me not to go, because I was, you know, a pujari at the time, and I was caring for the deities. And so the temple president told me, don't worry, Srila Prabhupada will come again. And so you, me, and another one of my God brothers said you should remain, because we had a very, very high standard for that. We had Gornitaiditis, but we had the same standard as the Radha Krishna, very, very high. And I just had the feeling that Prabhupada would not have come back again. It was true, because Prabhupada never came back after that. So I, when they left, I just said, I don't care what my temple president said, you should not follow my instruction. The temple president should be obeyed. There was a particular situation. So they, I left. I arrived the last of the devotees arriving. And I don't know what happened. Anyway, the only service left was guarded by the door of Srila Prabhupada. So I was staying there for some time, 7 days, without leaving, day and night. I was 20 years old, so it's, can be made at that age. The first time I saw Srila Prabhupada, he was completely alone. And I was expecting something very opulent from a spiritual master of that degree. And he was sitting on the floor, taking prasadam, completely at ease. If it was not because I knew that he was Srila Prabhupada, it could have been, in India, could have been anyone. You know, there were so many. He was very simple with his cotton dhoti, and he not even had his uttariya, just the kurtan. Taking prasada without touching the prasada with his finger, just these three, you know, and not using the left hand like this. He was separating the chapati with the three. I've never been able to do that. He would do that anyway, putting together rice and sabji together, and then not touching the lips with the fingers, and letting very graciously fold the prasada into it. And when he saw me, since he was looking like this and I was coming in this way, he asked me, what can I do for you? This is just a very simple phrase, but you had to translate it in a very particular emotion. It was my first time that I was seeing my spiritual master. For me, my spiritual master was not a man, still not a man. It was like a man from a personality from the... This is how I was seeing Srila Prabhupada, a deity, a working deity. Still, it's like this. So he asked me that, and I would understand how caring he was. I was a 20 years old boy, basically a kid, you know, and he had very much interest into me. Thousands of disciples, of millions of people, he was translating incredible, beautiful books and so many things to do. He was ready to listen to me for days, you know. Then I was very shy. I'm still very shy as a person. You know, I try to keep my myself. I don't go very much into big crowds because this is my nature. So I didn't take profit from Srila Prabhupada's question. I would serve him during the day, and sometimes he would ask me things I never spoke to him personally because I was so shy. But I was listening very, very clearly, you know. And I loved listening to my spiritual master. And this is very, very, very important to listen attentively. Don't be a fool like me. Make questions, you know. And this is something very important. Srila Prabhupada was very, very caring. The Vaishnava, what he characterizes a Vaishnava, is the care he has towards others. The only reason why a Vaishnava is living in this world is to give Krishna consciousness to other people. There's no other, otherwise we want to go. We have nothing to do in this world. We don't have much desires, you know, a little bit maybe, you know, but we can go. But we have a mission. And I remember the instruction that Srila Prabhupada gave me, actually, well, didn't give it to me, gave it to everybody, but since he was looking at me at that moment, I took it like a personal instruction, you know, where at 7 o'clock in the morning there was a Bhagavatam class, and Srila Prabhupada was giving Bhagavatam class. I was sitting Alice lotus feet because I was his personal guardian. I was always following him. And then he looked at me and said, whoever says to be my disciple should spend his entire life to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. Mm-hmm. Clear word, but I remember like today, I still hear his voice saying this. And this is what a Vaishnava is about. Vaishnava life means to learn Krishna consciousness, be happy with his new life, with his different life, and give it to others. We have nothing else to do. What do you have to do? Money will go. In a few days, you'll be old. And then all your money and family, everything will go away. Like this. Like this. I'm 58 now. I'm not very old, but 58 is not young. I can't believe it, I'm 58. I really can't believe it. It seems yesterday that I joined this wonderful movement. I was a brahmachari for many years. It seems yesterday I'm 58.
When is your birthday?
December 8th.
Yeah.
I can't believe it. So it's time go away very, very fast, very quick. Don't let it go. Don't waste it. Because it doesn't come back, at least not in this life. And if you are not fully Krishna conscious, then you may not come back as a human being. And then what about the continuation of your devotional service? What about you are risking not taking birth in a country where there are no Vaishnavas, where there are, basically you are everywhere, but you know, there is always some place where. But don't risk. Don't risk it. Try to finish the business in this life. Become a pure devotee today, in this lifetime. Any question?
Thank you very much, Guru. That was very enlightening. I wanted to see if you can speak a little more about the nature of Krishna consciousness. You mentioned about passing of time and wasting time, and you mentioned how other things don't matter, really. So that was Arjuna's dilemma. Let's say I decide to adopt Krishna consciousness. So what am I losing? Is there something we are losing when and if or if we adopt Krishna consciousness? Or, I mean, you mentioned the gain. The gain is eternal and it's the liberation. But is there something we are losing when we adopt Krishna consciousness?
This is extremely subtle. For instance, to understand this principle, let's talk about the word Dharma. What Dharma means? The word Dharma comes from the Sanskrit root, dri, which means to sustain. So through a complex operation of construction, from the verb to the substantive, to the Sanskrit verb to the Sanskrit substantive, becomes dharma. Dharma means the sustenance. But we can see that even in the Shastras, the word dharma has been used in different occasions, which is not. You say that in English that it doesn't match with the other one.
Mismatch.
Yeah, it's like. Huh?
Context?
Yeah, it's like sometimes it's been used to mean something, and some other time he uses the same word to mean something else that may even be opposite to one or with the other.
Contradictory.
Contradictory. And there is another, it doesn't matter.
Controversial.
also, it becomes also controversial. Anyway, so why the same word has been used to mean several things? Because according to the stage of the person, something may be useful for this person, and the same thing that is useful for another person may be counterproductive for that person. So the dharma, or the duty of a person, depends from the level of consciousness one person is. For instance, when the devotees met me, I was 18 years old, I was a boy. So, and at that time we were all very, very young, and there was a lot of push towards total renunciation. We were monks, you know, monks, really monks. And, you know, I had my music and my girlfriend, I had so many things. So, and the devotees, and I said, look, you know, I don't really want to join now. Maybe I should wait a little bit to finish my studies. Or... And they said, no, you should give everything up. You just join every day. They would preach to me very, very strongly. And actually, I remembering those days, I needed that push because I was ready. I wanted to give up everything. I wanted to join. And that was very good for me. Now, when I look back to my life, I couldn't have desired a better life. Mm-hmm. I couldn't. This is the best life. I'm totally happy with the life I did until now. And I'm sure that whatever is left, it will be even better. Mm-hmm. But let's say that you get today, very fast forward, today, which is a different mentality, a different age, people think differently, and maybe a person has a family and the children, and is not prepared really, he doesn't want to, I wanted to join, but just needed a little push. But someone really doesn't want to join because he's not prepared, just like that man, the Buddhist disciple I was telling you before. He's not ready to be a Vaishnava. He's really not ready. 12 years. Mm-hmm. You know, he's been my student for 12 years. It's a long, long time. He's not ready. Maybe he will never be in his lifetime. So, if you go to this type of person and tell him, give everything up, give up family, give up children, give up everything, you are not a Buddhist. Either you are Buddhist or we will reject you as disciples. Or this and that, you can tell him. You can destroy his spiritual life. You can destroy it. Why? Because his dharma, or the application of absolute knowledge in his case, is different from the application of the absolute knowledge to another person. That's why the spiritual master has to be very expert in applications, how to apply the same knowledge. It can be totally counterproductive for the spiritual life of one person, forcing one person to be something that is not prepared to be. So, the Krishna consciousness and the ways to advance in Krishna consciousness very much depends from place, circumstances, and persons, and sometimes even group of persons, you see? And we have to be very expert. As a preachers, we have to be very expert. Because the same good preaching that you enthusiasm and that you enlighten people and everyone is happy about the preaching, you do the same lecture to another place and everyone leaves and says, I don't want to listen to this man anymore for the rest of my life. It happened to me. It happened to me. Same class I gave to one person, another I gave another person, I was a total failure. Was a fiasco, total fiasco. We had to be preacher, cannot be a parrot. Like in the Bhagavad, they said that the preacher should be a parrot. So we, in the beginning, we understood that we had to repeat exactly word by word what our spiritual master said. Oh, this is wrong. Parrot doesn't mean that. Parrot means, in India, there are several type of parrots, and there is one type of parrot which is called Shuka. It's very green, and its green is very bright. In Vrindavan there are millions. When they land, it's like, wow, it's a beautiful carpet of very green parrots. So this kind of parrots have a power that when they go to eat the fruit, they have some chemical inside this saliva that it gets into the fruit, and this fruit becomes even sweeter than before. So Srila Prabhupada was using this analogy to explain, like, the Bhagavata was very, very sweet, but when it was spoken by such a pure devotee, parrot-like, Shukadeva Goswami, that's why he was called Shukadeva Goswami. So since he was so pure, he put his own transcendental chemical inside in what he was saying, the way he was saying it, that this fruit, the fruit of transcendental knowledge, became even sweeter and even deeper. This is what Srila Prabhupada meant when he said that we should be like parrot. Parrot means you have to put your transcendental chemical inside your preaching. Open your eyes and see who you have in front, and don't preach to this person in a way that you may damage spiritual life. You may damage spiritual life. You have to be careful how you preach. So Krishna consciousness is a very personal thing. Dharma is different depending from place, circumstance, age, and persons, and we have to be very careful to apply it, not to damage people's spiritual life by telling them, forcing them to do things they are not ready to do. Sometimes I can see the persons, they just need a little push. Sometimes you see that if I push them, they just go. They never show up again. So it is easy to be a preacher? No, it is not. But it's the best job that one can find. It's just beautiful. You help people by being gentle. Gentle means don't tell people what you like to say and to hear from yourself. Say things that are useful to the person who are hearing, even if it disturbs you. You know, sometimes me, in my stage of life, I will say something that I don't like to say. Mm-hmm. You know, like I remember where I was, I even forget where I am. Maybe in Puerto Rico, there was this person doing a terrible job. You know, he was doing like, you know. But I know him since several years, and I know that he's not going to give up the job. So he came to me and he said, "Maharaj, what should I do? Should I give up this job?" I said, "No, don't give up your job. Stick to your job. You should continue." I said, "I was preaching, and I dislike saying the thing because I want him to give up his job. I want him to quit. But I know he won't do it. Because I told him at least 10 times he didn't do it. He never did it." So every time he meets me, he keeps asking me, "Should I give up my job?" And now, in the beginning I was saying, "Yes, give it up." And didn't give it. I now say, "No, keep it." So sometimes the preacher has to say things that he himself doesn't like. Sometimes we want to say Radha Krishna pastimes, you know. And it's not that we always like to tell, you know, this body, etc. You know, this is a philosophy that we've been telling for almost 40 years now. And we would like to say something more, something, you know. But it's a duty, our dharma is a duty to say what is useful to the person who is hearing and not what you would like to do. Because what you like and what is right are often two different things. We should do what is right and not what we like.
Thanks again for being here with us, and also your wife is making wonderful prasad, I would assume. Thanks, it's a privilege to have you. I do have a question. Let's say that someone takes to this process, they chant for some time. They develop a taste for the chanting, which leads to some service. They start to do some service around temples for devotees, etc. Sometimes, I guess my question, is it better to do one service, the highest we can do it, taking a Krishna and pleasing Guru, taking our time at sometimes, really doing it thorough? Or is it better to scatter and do things halfway and just do many tasks? Can you help with that?
you should do whatever your authority tells you to do, mm-hmm. because this is the safest way of doing devotional service. Although, from an objective point of view, there could be many things I could say. There is no doubt that it's better to do your natural, the service that appeals to your nature. And Bhagavad Gita itself say that it's very dangerous to do somebody else's duty, you know, etc., etc. But especially in the beginning of spiritual life, our nature, interior nature, is not revealed yet. So we may mistake something that we like for something that is right, like I was saying before, like I was saying. So first of all, you should do a work of general purification, of disgross your mind and heart, and then your nature will come out one day. And again, I don't know if it disturbs you that I say things regarding me, but I don't find better analogies, I'm sorry. As a kid, I was a writer. I used to write. This is what I've been doing most of my life. When I joined, the devotees prohibited me from writing because they say, well, Prabhupada writes, so why what do I want to write, you know? And I said, okay, but Prabhupada also chants. So what does it mean, you know? They told you Prabhupada should chant. But anyway, they were adamant in telling me, and Prabhupada cooks, and Prabhupada manages. What does it mean? But anyway, at that time, we were very young and very fanatic, and sometimes fanatics, I would say, in a positive way, sometimes as a negative way, whatever, but that's us. That was us. Yeah. So we could, if we didn't do better, it's because we couldn't do better. Anyway, they prohibited me from writing for years. And I was suffering like anything, because for me, right at the time there was still the pen, was like I was, you know, itching my mind. Every time I wanted to say something, I wanted to write it down, I couldn't, you know. Now that I look back after so many years, I say that those years that I restrained myself from doing what I believed that was right actually was very useful, because whatever was right at that time was not right. Now I understand that that time it was right, but not at that time. I had to wait and purify myself a little bit. And after, when I became writing, now I published 15 books, you know, it's a lot of books. But those years that I didn't write, I remember them as a very, with a lot of cherish. So the beginning of spiritual life, the best way to conduct your devotional service, you should go to your authority, whatever temple president or the guru. Don't think that the guru, your immediate guru is a temple president, because this is how Prabhupada wanted it. You will have a guru, of course. The day you meet your guru, you accept his instruction, etc. But the first guru or the authority, a spiritual authority or a temple, is the temple president. He should be obeyed first. Then you shall go and tell him, what should I do? If you're not convinced, though, it's not absolute authority. If you're not convinced, then you should go to a superior authority, very humbly. Don't say, oh, the temple president is a nonsense, he doesn't know what he's talking about. Don't say that. You say, you know, I've been received a very nice instruction, I just have some feeling that it may be not perfect. So can you please explain me if it's totally correct, or maybe something can be perfected? And then the superior authority will tell you. Normally no authority in ISKCON goes against any other authority. But maybe he talks with your immediate authority, saying, what do you think? This is maybe better, you know, for him. And there is some discussion, and maybe the thing can be changed. But this chain of authorities in ISKCON is very safe, because on one side, you will have sooner or later the right answer to your question. At the same time, you maintain your etiquette, which is very good for your upbringing, for your maturity, for your becoming mature, because we are by nature dasa, or servant, and rebellious is not a nature of a servant. The servant is humble, the servant does things, the servant like this. Then we learn how to be a servant. At the same time, we also learn how to end up doing the right thing.
Thank you very much. Very thorough.
For how many years did you not write? How
long? 6 years. At that time, it was endless. No, actually, will I join and say, no, let me correct. Okay, this is how, if you want to know, I don't know, maybe, if you don't want to know, just tell me. The first book that I wrote was in 87, I joined in 74, so it was 84, 87, it was 13 years. 13 years I didn't write. So one day there was the day of appearance of Sri Ramachandra. And, you know, I've always been a studious person. I knew the story from the beginning to the end, etc. I read many editions of Ramayana. So the devotee, I was a temple president at that time. It was a big temple in Sicily. So we had, and the devotees asked me, because we had, how you say, desayuno, we didn't eat the whole day. Fasting. Was a fasting the whole day. Actually, it wasn't supposed to be the whole day, just a midday. But at the time, we were like this. It's a mistake. Anyway, the devotee said, okay, we want to hear the whole story. So I began at 5 o'clock in the morning, you know, the whole day. You know, we stopped 4 a.m. to accept the whole Ramayana in one day. So they didn't tell me anything, but they typed the class. And at the end, they came up with those transcripts. You know, and then I saw this transcript, and it was my book, my first book. I was in ecstasy because as a boy I wrote books and articles and for newspapers, etc. So the whole desire came up and I started to write again. The first book that I published was that Ramayana. Hmm. And then I published the Mahabharata and other books. So I think that period of time is sometimes very useful. Maybe you are a musician, and sometimes it's good, sometimes it may not be good. I don't know you. I will not tell you one word about it. But, you know, ask your authorities. It's good. You should be a musician. Maybe you should wait or not. Who knows? That's... it fortifies. Being disciplined, it fortifies you. It makes you strong.
Was writing much easier after that weight?
Yeah. It flew very much because I thought that I was blessed. Finally, that I was blessed to do it. To do a devotional service, you should be blessed. You know, and there is no doubt that Srila Prabhupada gave us the blessing, the duty to preach Krishna consciousness, but I didn't receive from my spiritual master any specific instruction in writing. So I thought that at that point I was blessed by my spiritual master. And we should always seek blessings to do our devotional service. Then we flow. Otherwise, we force, it doesn't come out. We try, we do something, but it doesn't come out. It's not successful. You know, when we give it up, like Draupadi, you know the story of Draupadi? The Sari, you know the story? You know, during the Mahabharata story, there were these two parties, the Kurava and the Pandava. The Kurava was headed by Duryodhana. They were very jealous and envious of the Pandavas. So through a game of dice, they took everything away from the Pandavas. And at the end, they won even their wife, who was Draupadi. So at that point, to insult them and Draupadi, Duryodhana said, you said, strip her up, take away her clothes in front of everybody, is the most abominous work thing that you can make to such a saintly, chaste lady. A stripper up naked in front of everybody. She also had a period, so she had nothing below, because in India when you do, they don't put anything below. So it was a very disgusting thing, insulting thing to do. So Duryodhana's brother, whose name was Dushasan, went to her and tried to take away the sari from her. And she was trying to keep, was trying to resist. But he was a man, and she was a woman, very strong, and she couldn't make it. So at a certain point, she understood. And she said, I have no shelter. My only shelter is Krishna. Then let it go, and put her arms toward the sky, and he said, please, Govinda, Yadava, he called Krishna, with all the thousands of names. There is an entire chapter of the Bhagavata telling the Draupadi's prayers to Lord Krishna. Please help me. I'm drowning. I remember this expression, drowning in the oceans of the Kaurava. Please help me. And then Dushasan started to pull and pull and pull, and sigh came by meters, by tens of meters, and it became a big mountain of cloth, but she was never stripped naked. Why was that? Because she let it go. There are a point where things become successful only when you have blessings, when they come spiritually in a natural way. And you can see that it becomes easy. And before you were trying, oh, I want to do this, you know. And you do it, but it doesn't come out right. Just let it go. You see how everything will happen naturally. Okay. If there is last question, otherwise we stop here. It's been 1 hour and 25 minutes. That's quite long. No more questions. Then thank you very much for your attention, and see you again some other time. Hare Krishna.